This episode of the Backside Ground Balls podcast is presented by The Performance Academy. For all of your athletic training needs, train with purpose at The Performance Academy. TPA houses a number of training resources from private baseball and softball instruction to team sports performance classes. Utilize advanced technologies like Output Sports, HitTrax, and TrackMan to take your game to the next level. On top of our elite staff and advanced technological capabilities, be a part of the TPA family and take advantage of the many resources our facility has to offer. We are super excited to announce that we are now partnering with Routine Baseball. For all of your clothing needs, athleisure, the sickest baseball gear you can get. We're talking hoodies, shorts, sweatpants, sunglasses, hats, any baseball style you can imagine. Routine Baseball has it, and we are now partnered with them. All you got to do is go to routine.com/backsideground ball. That's a mouthful, so I'm going to say it again. It's routine.com/backsideground ball and check out all the different options they have. You will receive 10% off your order today. One more time, routine.com/backsideground ball and get 10% off your order today. Want to go to a game? How about a concert? How about going to see classical music? Whatever you're into, there's only one place to get your tickets. And thankfully, we are partnered with SeatGeek, the essential resource for live events. For any of your ticket needs, make sure you go over to SeatGeek.com and use the code BACKSIDEGROUNDBALL to receive $20 off your first purchase. Again, that is SeatGeek.com, promo code BACKSIDEGROUNDBALL to receive $20 off your first purchase.
Welcome back to the Backside Ground Balls podcast. Super excited to be back here on the pod. My name is Trevor Powers, and I am joined by my co-host, Dan Galati. Dan, as my phone rings as we just went live, I guess my dad's watching live on whatever subscription service he has to get in on here. So we're trying to get our first live caller to the podcast. I'm sure he's got a great question about Florida State and Duke this weekend. I guarantee it.
Let's take him live.
I'm prepared for that in this stage of what we're trying to create as a podcast.
I have some questions about niche holidays that I think he can answer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get them online one for episode later when we take live Q&A from our most loyal fans and our day ones, for lack of a better term. But how we doing on this fine Wednesday afternoon?
Doing well. We're not getting good weather to record. Not that it matters, but this is too straight that we're getting kind of bad weather here to record. Is it not raining down there?
It's like a little bit cloudy, muggy, not very nice, but I wouldn't say it's bad by any stretch.
Oh, we got a lot of rain today, so.
Yeah.
Good for water.
I think maybe sometimes, Dan, you forget that I work 3 minutes from your house.
Oh, yeah, I do forget that. I never remember that you're there. Never. Never, ever. I always assume you're home. I don't know why.
You know, we're just out here, you know. But my dad also, on side note, my dad just left me a voicemail, like text messages don't exist. So I'm intrigued by.
That's a dad thing.
Is it my not my dad? Absolutely. That's not normal.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. That's a my dad thing then. I feel like
must be urgent, I guess.
He doesn't do it as much as he used to.
Yeah.
Yeah. He used to always like, I don't really delete voicemails. Yeah, I guess it's been a while. I've gotten a voice. Sorry, I apologize to my dad who I know listens. I haven't gotten a voicemail from him since March of 2023. So that's on me.
That's a pretty long time ago. Yeah, we can use some text messages now. I'd love to have your dad call into the podcast. I know he was out there watching Kentucky-Tennessee last weekend. He's a big college baseball fan. He's all bought in.
Yeah, we got him. If we've done nothing else on this podcast, also, hi, Brady. If we've done nothing else on this podcast, we've gotten my dad to pay attention to college baseball, which is pretty cool. So we've at least that's success in my book.
More dialed in than when you were coaching 3 minutes down the road from the house.
Do you blame him?
No.
Me neither.
And we don't need to go into the depths of why I don't blame him, because then, you know, we might burn some bridges with some people that we still have a lot of respect and friendliness with.
Whatever. Yeah. He likes to listen. I don't know how much he's actually watching, though. I know he'll be locked into all of postseason play.
But that's fair.
And this is less about the fact that he's not watching it, more about the fact that college baseball regular season is still very inaccessible. And I know everyone's like, well, who doesn't have ESPN Plus these days? Sure, I get that. I understand. But like the fact that 98% of these games are played on a behind a paywall of some kind, subscription service, and like the CAA, like, really good product. They don't care if anyone who isn't a relative or family member of those kids ever watch them play, because do you know anyone who has a Flow Sports subscription?
So no free ads, but from my understanding, if you have a D1 baseball subscription, you also get Flow Sports.
Yeah, no free ads. See, it's stupid.
No free ads.
Do you know anyone who has a Flow Sports subscription?
I know nobody that has a Flow Sports subscription that would not be affiliated with a program that needs Flow Sports subscription.
How many degrees of separation are we away from finding someone that has one not affiliated, right? So like non-player relative, non-coach relative, like how many degrees of separation before we find someone out there who has one?
Non-player relevant.
I don't think that, like, why did the CAA do that?
I'm sure there's money in it for them. I don't know. Because they also, I'm pretty sure Flow Sports also has their football. I'm not mistaken. Yes.
How many degrees of separation are we away from someone who has a Flow Sports subscription to watch the CAA football slate?
I don't know. CAA is good football.
Fans out there.
Yeah, we have big Villanova fans. Yeah, I don't know if the CAA is actively on Flow Sports as well, but I know for a fact that, I mean, obviously we know baseball is, but I'm pretty sure that's a part of the contract. So CAA football is on Flow Sports.
Not basketball.
All CAA sports are, yes, basketball, everything. All CAA sports are on Flow Sports as the main provider.
Interesting. Okay.
It's like a small little ESPN coming in and I guess offering enough money to do pretty important football games.
For sure. I mean, on the FCS scale, absolutely, right? It's a good conference in the FCS, is it not?
Oh, it's one of the best. But while we complain about Flow Sports, let's talk about a couple programs that you probably could have called on Flow Sports this week. As Elon shut out our good friends up at Wake Forest 3-0. It's back-to-back years where Elon won a home game against Wake Forest. Campbell, again, Flow Sports product. Maybe we should have been tuned in on the fine Tuesday evening that was last night. They pounded Duke 18-4. They went up early. Lawson Harrell had three home runs, including a grand slam. East Carolina takes down NC State. Georgia and Clemson had a 15-inning battle royale that Georgia ended up coming on top of. Dan, fair or foul?
Foul. 15-inning. Oh, the home run? Fair. I thought you meant playing 15-inning midweek.
No, foul. Yeah, well,
foul.
That would be
foul.
On the,
home run
that
was
would
fair.
Be on the advisory board where we are just going to go 5-batter minimum and nothing beyond.
Counts.
Yeah, 3-2 counts, 5-batter minimum, and we are canning the game at 2 hours and 35 minutes. Everybody's going to be on the road no matter what the score is. Drop dead. We're talking about drop dead. We're not talking about wiggle room there. Creighton beat Coastal. What are you going to say?
The fact that they went 15 innings and had to do that on a Tuesday is, as to your point you were trying to make, is on the umpires, because that home run was very fair.
Yes.
But
I disappeared.
It's called a foul, so dogs win.
It disappeared behind the foul pole.
It was fair by a lot. We got four umps down there. It's the SEC.
Hey, man. It's the SEC. Maybe they're down there working with Brad Bohannon. Throwback, Creighton beats Coastal Carolina 7-3. And then in the backside ground balls midweek game of the week, we had the Running Bulldogs, who lost 5-2 to the UNC Tar Heels of Chapel Hill in a good game that we were on site for. Lucky enough to be down on the field early for that game. Shout out to the coaching staff at Gardner-Webb, good friends of ours, and being able to hang out with them. It was good to see them. And the Dogs are playing good baseball. And the Radford Reptiles, I think, are the best team in the country at this point in time. And I'm really bought in on what the Radford Reptiles have got going. And I think that they have a great shot to sweep the Running Bulldogs this weekend.
Yeah. Agreed. Clearly the best team in the Big South.
For anybody that doesn't follow Big South preseason coaches polls, Radford's head coach would be my guess. All right, actually, I'm not going to throw accusations out there.
Don't do this, yeah.
There's one team that put Radford 1 in the preseason coaches poll, and then everybody else put them last because they finished last.
This happened.
And I don't know who put them 1. Not going to guess. But at this point in time, the Radford Reptiles are currently last.
The SEC football preseason coaches poll, I think 2 or 3 straight years running, Vanderbilt's got in the first place vote.
So I don't know who it was. I don't know if anybody's as big of a troll, apparently, as somebody putting Vanderbilt in the SEC is. That seems like a very Lane Kiffin thing to happen. But I don't know if anybody in the Big South is Lane Kiffin-esque troll of putting the team that is everybody else puts last at 1.
Yeah, I don't know the mechanics it's very interesting, but maybe that's like I don't want to throw accusations either. I was going to throw accusations, but like, could you imagine like, let's say I opened up a school tomorrow. Mm. I'm trying to inspire some confidence. It's like I believe we're going to be the best team in this conference, so why wouldn't I vote us number 1 type of thing?
I think every coach would say the same thing, and I completely agree with that sentiment, and I understand where that's coming from. And it would have been the ultimate flex if they did end it. Like, could you imagine having that much belief in your club and everybody votes you last and you end up first? And a little bit, this is Danielle's favorite story. This will be the last thing. For anybody that does not know, where I played college baseball, we weren't very good. So my junior year, the coaches poll came out and we were last. And an unsaid teammate of mine had it as his lock phone, like the lock screen on his phone for an extended period of time. And we finished last in the conference.
Name names. Name names. Come on. Name names. Name names. Who was he?
It's my favorite story. It's Danielle's favorite story in the world. It's like she'll bring it up randomly and be like, remember when said player screenshotted the coach's poll as motivation? Please. And you ended up like, he didn't even wait till the end of the season. He took it out after like 5 or 6 conference series. He was like, yeah, this probably isn't working.
Do you have a relationship with this person?
Not a very good one.
So you don't feel comfortable airing them out?
Yeah, pretty much. If it was somebody that I still talk to and had a good relationship with, I would be friggin' putting them on now.
Fair enough. Cause we were going to pull up stats too.
That's a good story though. Like that is one of my few favorites
that
of like
is so, but that's what honestly that kind of goes to show you like what the point that I've been trying to make about Kentucky, about like college kids and confidence, and like you can't tell them anything. Like there's a perfect example of it. Like obviously it didn't work out for my guy, but I appreciate it. Like they're going to every season thinking like every team going into the season for the most part, you could go to every school in the country and I think find at least, I would set the over under it, like 3.5 guys who think they're the best team in their conference. Like there's guys on UMES who, our Owens.
Dude, what are we doing with dirty laundry right now? We're just freaking throwing schools.
But there's a couple guys in that locker room that thought they were going to win that conference this year. I can guarantee
100%. 100%, yeah.
They should start by just trying to win a game, but that's me.
We're just airing programs out, and we're just name-dropping programs that most of the national college baseball public probably didn't even know exist. Like the fact that Radford's the Radford Reptiles, and they
not
were voted.
Accurate, but that's all right.
They are. What are you talking about? Come on.
There's no way they're the Radford Reptiles.
They are the major league team for the Raleigh Reptiles. Right. All right, let's start talking about the
Highlanders. Highlanders.
Dude, it's – come on, man.
Right, Reptiles is better. Pitch it.
All right, let's talk about the series across the country that are going to be on the national scene. I try to avoid words like are going to be more important. Let's talk about one. Let's start in the ACC, where the Florida State Seminoles will be traveling north again, a second straight weekend in our neck of the woods in North Carolina, where they will be coming up to play the Duke Blue Devils. Duke has won four straight conference series, coming off a tight one, an impressive series win up in Blacksburg against the Virginia Tech Hokies. Florida State is coming off that series loss against Wake Forest that we broke down a little bit more in detail over the last couple days, but they obviously played good enough to be right in every game. They're still without their starters, Cam Leiter and Connor Whitaker, but they'll have Jamie Arnold, and he's going to face off against Jonathan Santucci on Friday night. But Dan, initial thoughts on this series, and what are you looking forward to specifically from either of these clubs?
Yeah, I think Duke's just a really interesting team because they had the big series win against Wake Forest. Then they dropped a series against NC State, and I feel like they kind of had fallen out of the national, like the series win against Wake, everyone was talking about them right after. I think that was the highest they had ever been ranked in program history. They were inside the top 10. Then they dropped the series against Clemson at home. Then they went to NC State the next weekend and lost another one. They blew isn't that the game where they blew a like 8-0 lead or whatever in the ninth inning? And so everyone was like two straight conference series losses. Everyone can kind of stop talking about them a little bit. And they haven't lost a conference series since then. They've been playing really good baseball. Obviously, last night, whatever. Like, that's one of those things. It's a midweek one-off. Usually, they take care of business. We saw them beat Campbell earlier in the year by a good margin. I think they beat him by 10. So then here you go. This is another huge weekend matchup for them against Florida State. And they've sneaky been rolling. And a lot of people like them as their ACC dark horse. And they've positioned themselves as that. They're a legitimate national contender. Obviously led by Santucci on the mound, and offensively they have a bunch of guys who, you know, are physical and I think are really good players. I was up there a couple weeks ago, saw him play against Gardner-Webb at home, and just seeing some of those guys get into the box, the way they handle themselves, take their at-bats. Obviously talked a lot last pod about AJ Grossi and how good he is. So for me, just kind of, you know, we talked a lot about Florida State before the Wake series, after the Wake series, obviously they're fantastic, but to me, I think this is kind of about Duke and continuing to kind of be that surprise team and that team that could very well win the ACC, very well go on a run, be hosting a regional, be hosting a super, although probably not because of NCAA rules about seeding. But
who?
Duke.
Yes, no, they cannot. They cannot host a regional, even if they would be in a position to
do renovations this summer, but whatever.
I'm sure that's – I think that's the motive to going back to your home stadium rather than being at DBAP is to eventually host, because they always ran into the problem of their, now they're starting to build a contender, and then obviously the Durham Bulls are in the full swing of the season. I'm going to throw a theory out here. If you look at Duke's schedule – They obviously play host to Florida State this weekend. That's going to be big for all intensive purposes, RPI, conference play, everything that comes into it. They have a 7-day gap from when they close the series against Florida State to Longwood. I'm not going to say that I'm not reading into the loss to Campbell, because that's an impressive win for the Fighting Camels, who have kind of been reeling in CAA play. But I'm going to say that Duke came down here and probably played their developmental squad, because they know how important these wins are, and they know how important it is to have a bunch of bullpen arms that are going to be in a position to get them big outs this weekend. So, again, I'm not throwing around the fact that they basically came down here and punted, But I'm sure when you give up, when your starter gives up five earned runs through an inning and a third, and then the guy that follows him up gives up five earned in an inning, you probably say, you know what? We're probably better off saving our bullets for the Seminoles that are going to be coming north rather than trying to claw our way back, even if we think we do have the offense that can score against the Campbell pitching staff. So just a hunch there. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily wrong. I also think that this off week is going to be huge for them because just where it lands for them to get a little bit of a breather and then kind of say, okay, this is the stretch run here. And they're going to, you know, after those two games against Longwood, it's ECU, Georgia Tech, Charleston, North Carolina. And none of those are particularly like, those are all very good teams. Those are all teams you could potentially see in the postseason outside of maybe Georgia Tech, unless they go on a little bit of a run here. But like, so I think that, yes, I think they have Florida State coming up, and then they know they have a break after that. They had to get on a bus, and it was a short drive. I wouldn't be shocked if their mind was somewhere else, and especially with the way Campbell's been playing, because kids are looking at stats more than we are. You know, kid, they mm-hmm. know exactly what those teams have done. They know exactly what those guys have done. I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but we saw a reliever last night. Couple of relievers having to run down to the bullpen, clearly frustrated that they were having to get up on a Tuesday night. Like, just body language, facial expression, shaking their head, like, not happy that they were thrown in a Tuesday game. So I think you just get to that point of the year, right? Like, you're so solely focused on these big matchups, especially when you're Duke and you're sitting there at six and you know how important of a series it is against Florida State. Like, if you can win this series, you know, what's the conversation going to be like? Like, you kind of put yourself in the driver's seat here. Obviously, still two tough weekend series and conference play left after this, but this really sets them up if they can win it.
Dan, do you have a Florida State academic calendar on hand by any chance?
No, but I have Google. You need me to look it up?
No, I actually don't need you to look it up. But they also do not play any midweek games next weekend. Now, they do have a series against NC State, but I'm curious to see if this is actually just finals week that's coming up after the turn of April into early May. And that's why we're seeing a lot of teams that are canning some midweek games. So we're going to definitely see the best arms. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I'm not going to say that they're going to, I mean, it's going to be intensity. It's two top 10 teams, two teams that are definitely fighting for a national eight seed, be able to host a super regional. But I think both programs are going to treat this like the way a regional is. So don't be surprised, especially from Florida State standpoint, to see a guy arm specifically rolled out there twice, bullpen arms, important bullpen arms that may maybe come out and throw back-to-backs when they haven't thrown back-to-backs all year. Some guy that's a little bit more reliable, like Brennan Oxford, who's thrown a ton of big innings for him. And then just some other guys like Carson Dorsey, who's thrown a ton of innings for him. Just some different guys to keep in mind this weekend. And Duke on the same end, right? Like, being able, we know what their strength is in terms of, like, they have a ton of bullpen arms that you can trust and a ton of depth from that standpoint. Don't be surprised if we see a lot of those guys go for two outings, maybe even some length in those two outings. And they treat this full on like how they would treat a regional, where it's like, hey, you got to be ready for Friday and Sunday to give us at least three outs and maybe even more if you're feeling up for it, and maybe a couple guys. So I'll be fascinated to see how that unfolds, because again, with both not having midweek games next week, you're lining up your pitching to be in a good position. And I do think that that gives Florida State a little bit, not advantage per se, but Florida State being able to kind of stick their horses out in larger quantities of like, hey, like, we don't maybe have to think twice about throwing a guy like Oxford again on short rest, because we know that our depth is where we're limited, quite frankly, and being able to see those guys. I know Whitaker was a little bit closer to being back than Leiter is, from what it sounds like. So if they could get one of those two back, I think it would be really good to see Florida State kind of fully healthy and fully rolling and see what they can do in such a short window of a Friday to Sunday.
Yeah, good call. Both schools have finals next week.
Dang, look at that. Just spoken like a guy who worked in admissions.
Yeah, that was a good call there by you. Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. And I think this time of year in general for a lot of these teams starts to become that. And maybe a week earlier for schools that have finals and don't have, you know, aren't playing seven games in a week, four games in a week. What am I saying? Four games in a week
What are you talking about? The CAC?
The big leagues. Yeah, the CAC, I guess. Aren't playing four games in a week in the next couple of weeks, and you start treating it that way. But like as you start to look at the last, you know, two weekends of the regular season, absolutely. Like guys kind of stop getting opportunities when you get to that part in the year, especially in conference play. Like you know who your guys are, you know who your horses are, and you start to kind of, you know, press the pedal down a little bit more, especially if you've are a team like Duke or Florida State where you've been able to spread it because your offenses have scored and you've been able to have some big leads in games because you're one of the better teams in the country, then you could hopefully you've been managing the workload of some of those relievers to the point where you can build them up to this point and everything's kind of been trending in that direction. And now, yeah, now is the time where you kind of take the reins off a little bit, right? You let them go. Starting pitching may be a little different, but especially specifically bullpen arms, right? Because for a lot of these teams too, you're playing, you know, you want to play to host regionals. Like if you can be at home and be the host team for one of those things, you have such an advantage. We see it all the time. Like, you know, the majority of teams that head to a super hosted their regional.
Well, we talk about home road splits, right? Like right, we talk about them. Like it's like if you can guarantee more from Florida State standpoint than Duke, but if you can guarantee that you're getting a home super regional, now how does a Duke home super regional or home regional, or if they're a national eight seed, work? I don't know. That's the committee's decision to figure out if they're sending them somewhere that can have capacity, which is like, I think worst case scenario is like going to South Carolina as a hosting one. Like imagine that, like that stinks. What
does North Carolina, like do they get screwed?
North Carolina is going to be a one.
You think there'll be a one?
There'll be a national 16. I don't think there'll be a national eight.
Sure. But do you think they could be a – you think they'll be a 16?
Yes.
That would be interesting, mm-hmm. wouldn't it? I don't. Would Carolina even accept – I guess they would just to get that home environment.
Oh, you're like, saying could you imagine, as the two at
– like, could you imagine, Duke though, host, like, you're going to let Duke host at your place? Like, the rivalry implications. That, I mean, if NC State continues to play good ball and gets in, maybe that's the answer for Duke because they're so close.
True.
You know, because in my thought, like you said, like I wouldn't want to go to Founders as the host if I'm Duke. Absolutely not.
That's the worst place. Like anywhere. Absolutely. I think, like, but I'm just trying to think of like schools that could be a two that have hosting. And I don't know how like the neutral site, like we've seen in the past that like schools host that are
they head to Fayetteville, right?
Yeah. So like I don't know. I know that was what Campbell was prepped to do last year if they got the hosting opportunity, was to go down to Fayetteville, host in a minor league stadium. You know, who knows? Maybe Durham is open. I don't know. I don't understand the capacity thing. I don't know. We don't need to get in this right now
I just think it's because if you were like, let's say you didn't have, let's take neutral out of it. You would think that you would want to stay as close to home as possible, Duke. Right?
Yeah.
So in NC State, UNCW, if they win the CAA,
I don't think they
definitely don't have capacity. Yeah. What am I thinking? That's the whole reason Duke can't host. I guess they would have to find, like, you're either in, I guess it becomes, you're either finding a neutral or you're kind of screwed in that sense.
Do we have a one in recent memory off the top of your head?
I'm trying to run through my head here that I can't.
Bad podcasting. If only we had a researcher.
Campbell down the stretch last year. We were going
to. No, they just got placed in a two. They did. Yeah, they did lose to Gardner-Webley.
Right.
And then lost in the conference tournament. Yes. So they were in a tough spot.
They fell out.
And they ended up having to go to South Carolina as a two.
Someone has this answer for us, and I could probably search it, but it's also probably someone on the West Coast that we don't give enough attention to. So,
why don't you give me your prediction while I try to?
Yeah, I think that this is a series that, you know, a lot of it depends on the fact that I don't think that Florida State's going to have those two guys back, at least from the research that I've done. I can't see anywhere where they're expecting those guys to be back. So I would imagine that Whitaker and Leiter are probably out again this weekend. And I think that just kind of handcuffs them. You know, Jamie Arnold versus Santucci is going to be as fun of a matchup as Chase Burns was against Jamie Arnold last weekend. We know how good Arnold is, and he kind of outdueled Burns. And So to see him and Santucci battle it will be extremely exciting. It's going to come down to, in my opinion, kind of that, right? It's going to be the starting pitching. Both these offenses are loaded with guys who can leave the yard. They're loaded with guys who can do damage. Both offenses have been really good this year. So it's who's pitching staff, you know, because if you look at Duke, they're pitching to a 4-2-2, whereas Florida State's pitching to a 4-1-9, and you take out again Leiter and Whitaker most likely, then it's kind of interesting to see, you know, who can, you know, what bullpen can step up, what arms for Florida State can step up at the front of games and, you know, get outs at the clip they're going to need to and keep those big guys in Duke's lineup at bay for long enough for their offense to go to work. So I'm going to go with Duke under the assumption that those two guys aren't pitching. If Leiter was healthy, I would go with Florida State, truly. If Leiter pitches, I would say it's Florida State wins this one just because I think Florida State's too good to drop back-to-back series like this. I think they understand what they have to do after, you know, a really disappointing series where they probably could have won last weekend. And Duke's been hot 4 in a row. Feels like a good a time as ever for Duke to drop a series, but under the assumption Leiter's out, I'll say Duke. Duke continues to roll. Duke sets themselves up to potentially be, like you said, one of the National Eight.
Mm-hmm. I found it. I knew it had something to do with South Carolina. Old Dominion was the one seed Columbia, South Carolina, as South Carolina was the 3 seed, I want to say. I'll tell you.
That was how many years ago?
2 or 3. Virginia ended up, that was 2021. Virginia ended up coming out on top. Wow. So I don't know if
here's this regional we're going to let you host. We're going to give UVA and South Carolina at South Carolina.
Yep. Exactly. And yeah, tough. So not exactly what you want if you're the Duke Blue Devils, because they apparently have no conscience of where they send you. They will send you to South Carolina and you have to host at a 13,000 capacity SEC stadium and be like, and then they're also going to be the 2 seed and they're also going to be foaming at the mouth. But speaking of the Gamecocks, they are going to play host to another top 10 team in the country as the Kentucky Wildcats are going to head southeast down to Columbia, South Carolina to take on the Gamecocks. Kentucky's obviously hoping to bounce back. We spoke a lot about them in detail after the weekend that was. I know we didn't dive in because we did our midseason awards. That was a really fun podcast for anybody who's interested in it, but they have to bounce back and respond because they did lose their first SEC series and really lost their first 2 out of 3 series of the year, if I'm not mistaken. They had not lost 2 in a smaller quantity like that. South Carolina, obviously, we've talked about them kind of in passing. They come off a series loss at the hands of Arkansas or Texas A&M. I'm drawing a blank.
Texas A&M.
Sorry, I knew it was one of the two.
Arkansas.
Looking
at their schedule, it's Arkansas.
Yeah.
A&M was played Alabama last week.
Alabama. Yeah, so South Carolina is coming off a series loss against Arkansas where they had a chance to win, right? They lost the Hagan-Smith game 2-1. That's normal. They win on Saturday, obviously going into a rubber match, beating Arkansas because of Arkansas's depth is tough. But Dan, initial thoughts when we look at this series, Kentucky and South Carolina, and what are you hoping to see from either club to start to believe that in their chances of, you know, being a serious contender as we get down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm already sold on Kentucky, and I love the spot for Kentucky here just because you look at South Carolina, I feel like, you know, as much as I feel like their offense has underperformed, it's kind of been, they've lost a lot of tight games this year in games where you feel like if they could have just gotten a couple more outs out of their bullpen or their starting pitchers holding guys at bay, they would have been in a lot better position to win those series. That being said, like, I just, the way Kentucky's playing and the way you see this team, especially like how they handled that Tennessee series, like, I just fully expect Kentucky to come out and handle business, kind of. And I don't want to say take it to them, but kind of win a little bit handily here, because I just think that this team knows what they have in front of them. We've talked for weeks now about the confidence they're playing with, how they play kind of as a team on the whole. Okay, here's your first chance at handling adversity. And I just think that the way that they've kind of played all season long puts them in a good position to handle South Carolina, where they're just going to continue to apply pressure. And if they can get a couple good starts, South Carolina, again, feel like their offense has underperformed a little bit, they'll be able to just kind of pull away late in these games, and they've won tight games. South Carolina hasn't all year long.
Underperform might be an understatement for an offense with the names that they have, but let's talk about Kentucky first. I was curious to see how they handled a midweek. They went no midweek this week coming off, and I'd be curious to see, again, is your confidence shaken? I don't know. That's the question of, like, do you want to get back on the Schneid and play on Tuesday, or do you want that little breather to be like, hey, man, we were in every game. We had a shot and an opportunity to win. Tennessee's a really good club, and that's a team that's going to be a national championship contender. I know there's no second place trophies, I'm sure, in Lexington, but you know, how do you respond, right? Are you shaking confidently? You have to go on the road to a tough road environment. Weather's going to be nice. You know, it's starting to warm up, so people are going to start to come out. A night game, 7 o'clock, South Carolina. Again, this offense, while they haven't performed, still namesake, and there's value in that. But I think I'm with you. I believe in this Kentucky club, but I think it's going to say a lot about what Kentucky is going to be moving forward. So, like, if they come out and they kind of even sleepwalk their way to a 2 out of 3 win, which will be impressive to go on the road in any SEC capacity and win a series, if they don't come out and kind of resoundingly, like you said, handle their business, because I'm very pleasant or very underwhelmed by what South Carolina has done this year. I mean, in college baseball today, they're hitting .266 as a team with only 58 home runs. And that's with names like Ethan Petrie, Cole Messina, Gavin Cassis, Will Tippett are guys that have been around the block a time or two. And to have that kind of level of production is worrisome, to say the least. And then we've always known that South Carolina is in a pitching factory. That park doesn't play great to pitching. It's a really good opportunity for Kentucky to come in and show that they are for real. But if they don't come in and convincingly show it, I am officially going to be a little bit worried about what they have in store at home next weekend, which they also have no midweek games before. So they're really, you know, kind of bringing, saddling it together and putting all their chips in the weekend basket as they play host to Arkansas the next weekend. But I am going to want to see a lot from this Kentucky team this weekend, because it's an opportunity of a team that they should be better than. They should beat up on, not beat up on per se, but they should handle their business, because right, statistically speaking, South Carolina has struggled.
Yeah, it's almost shocking to see, like, a team that plays in that stadium that much talent and those guys that we saw last year, where it was just like an absolute fireworks display at all times, it felt like, for from South Carolina, and how good they were. I mean, they probably had the best at-bats we saw off Paul Skenes all season long. And like a lot of those guys that were in that lineup are in that lineup. They have two guys hitting over 300 on their entire offense, and they have a combined 18 at-bats. So like that means all the regulars, not a single one of them is under 300. And like you said, in this environment of college baseball, like every time you look at their numbers, you just kind of like, whoa, like what's happening there again? Like, especially the amount of guys that were in that lineup last year that you watched just, you know, put on an absolute display, to see kind of what it looks like this year has been disappointing.
And I think it's even more disappointing because I'm not going to say that their pitching's been good, but their pitching's been a pleasant surprise to, like you said, they're in most games, right? Like they're scratching and clawing. They have opportunities. You know, their pitching holds Arkansas. And again, Arkansas is not the murderer's row Yankees of an offense, but they held Arkansas to the point of being able to win a Hagen Smith start, right? So like nobody's going to expect your offense to score off of Hagen Smith level starters. But when your pitcher can give you a shot to win, you'd want to take advantage of that. And it's just kind of been to the point where like their pitching's given them opportunities to win baseball games, and they haven't taken advantage of it. Now, again, they swept Vanderbilt at home, right? They've had success at home, and a lot of their losses outside of the Texas A&M, and then obviously we have Arkansas that came to their park, have been on the road, and those are two of arguably the top two teams in the country. So does home field play that much of an advantage for this team? Who knows? I mean, this is the highs and low. I mean, they won a series against Florida. They've lost some games that they should have won. But this team, just from a namesake compared to production sake, you'd expect more. But there's two ends of that, right? Because you could be like, well, Ethan Petrie's a ticking time bomb. Not that he's been bad this year, but Ethan Petrie, Gavin Cassis, Cole Messina, those three guys, get them going for a weekend, and Kentucky's going to be rattled.
Yeah, and Petrie's been a disappointment, not in the sense that he has bad numbers, but in the sense that, like, I thought you'd be talking about him as one of the best. I thought we'd be sitting here talking about him as one of the best players in the country, like we were last year. Like, last year, yeah. It was like, this kid's unbelievable, and we thought he was only going to get better. He's taking a little bit of a step back. That's okay when your step back is still 296 with 15
pumps. Yeah.
You just thought he'd be pushing, you know, I thought he'd have Condon and Caglione numbers power-wise this year just because, one, the stadium he plays in, and two, it looked that effortless for him last year. Now, yeah. Teams in the league have made adjustments, and he's got to kind of figure it out and learn how to battle through some of the lows that he didn't really have to last year. But I agree with you. You want to see Kentucky handle it. Like I said, I love this spot for Kentucky because of the fact that they're coming off the loss to Tennessee, and now they get a South Carolina team that really isn't what we're used to seeing. And the fact that they know that Arkansas is next. So, like,
they need it. Just looking through the next three again, and say what you want about Florida. We can poke fun at them all the time. They have to head down to Gainesville and play that Florida team, and they could just get right at any moment. They need to win this series if they still want to have a chance of being a top eight national seed, because there are losses on the schedule coming to them. Now, how much and how many and how large of quantity, can't answer that question right now. But the reality is like, it only gets, like, South Carolina is the easy series, including the Tennessee series, that they have left on the schedule, to me.
I agree. And, like, that's a setup. Going to Gainesville feels like that could be the get-right series for Florida, right? You've seen Florida disappoint, and then here comes this Kentucky Cinderella, and you can just feel Florida. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself here. It's 2 weeks away, but you could feel Florida just kind of, like, oh yeah, remember this team that has all this talent that's severely underperformed all year? Well, we're still really good. So yeah, Kentucky, you do kind of feel like there's losses on that schedule the rest of the way. You know, the number 3 in RPI, 14 in strength of schedule, they only have 7 losses. They're in a good spot, but they need to collect the wins when they can. Like you're saying, I couldn't agree more. And South Carolina kind of feels like the team that, like, okay, handle business here, dominate this series. Go out there, win it, and then, you know, if you can steal one from Arkansas, win a series against Florida, you're kind of positioned, and outside of getting swept against Vanderbilt at home, you're kind of positioned right where you need to be.
Yep, sounds good. So let's head out west and talk about the big series in the Pac-12, and we have not talked about Pac-12 baseball in a while. We spent more time on the Monday episode talking about Pac-12 baseball in our Omaha 8 situation, talking about how Arizona's won 14 of their last 15. We talked about Oregon State being swept and whether we have concerns about this club. But both Oregon State and Oregon are going to be tested as two of the top 25 teams in the country out west, as they have a nice little rivalry series. In the last time, Oregon's going to be in the Pac-12. Nice little honorary series here as Oregon transitions to the Big Ten next year, which will be a good opportunity. I'm sure they'll play because they're so local. They'll probably play a series early, keep the rivalry game intact, but will be a fun one. But Oregon State isn't playing their best baseball right now. They're currently 2-5 in their last 7 games, coming off of a sweep at the hands of Cal, who's a good club but not a great club. And then they were down early against Portland in the midweek, but they stormed back to win that game. Obviously, we've talked about Travis Bazana. What else is they gonna have outside of him? Who else is gonna step up? But very intriguing series in the last year of the Pac-12 and the last time these teams will face off in terms of Pac-12 play.
Yeah, the Civil War, as it's known out there, is always fun in any sport, and it's kind of a shame that this won't be a conference series moving forward. But this is, you know, for the Pac-12 overall, this is a big series because we know Oregon State's gonna be well represented, and they'll probably host a regional. But for Oregon, this is a huge opportunity. Like you said, Oregon State's kind of, you know, they just got swept by Cal. This is a big spot for Oregon to come in and try and kind of solidify their positioning. They're ranked 22nd right now. They can move up the standings with a big weekend this weekend against Oregon State. Kind of weird. They also play each other midweek on Tuesday, so they're going to be sick and tired of each other by the time this week's over, which is awesome. And I kind of love that. I don't think I've ever seen that, but this is a big spot for Oregon. And for Oregon State, if you want to get back into that top eight and have a chance to probably not really leave the West Coast until you head to Omaha, potentially, you got to bounce back from that sweep against Cal.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And Dan, let me give you an opportunity to guess what the weather will be in Corvallis this weekend.
Okay. There's a chance of rain every day.
Yes.
No doubt about it. There's going to be wind. I'm trying to figure out what the highs are going to be. It is the end of April. We're getting close to May, but you're still in Corvallis. So I'm going to say the highest temperature you'll get all weekend is going to be 50. Oh, night games.
Night, let's go on day. Just go by day.
Just day. Okay. So the highest temperature you'll get for any of the 3 days is going to be 49 degrees. 51. No. 51. I went low. 51.
You went a little too low.
Too low.
We have Thursday, which I know they don't play Thursday, 54 rain, 100% chance of precipitation, 14-mile-per-hour winds. On Friday, 54 rain, 70% chance of precipitation, 10-mile-per-hour winds. Saturday, 56 rain, 40% precipitation, 10-mile-per-hour winds. Sunday, 58, 50% chance of precipitation and rain. And 12-mile-per-hour winds.
They're going to be in bathing suits on Sunday.
Well, you know, in Oregon, you just get rained on and show back up there and keep playing baseball. So it'll be fascinating to see how the weather holds up. But again, when we talk about this Oregon State team, I mean, offensively, they're, and I guess this is par for the course of Oregon State baseball, they've always had really good offenses, and they always sneak up on you. Again, Dan and I are older than in our souls than we are in our age. We don't stay up late a ton. We need some better opportunities to watch Oregon State. And really on the national landscape, when was the last time everybody watched Oregon State? I remember we're sitting there freaking chuckling it up over dinner, watching Hagen Smith strike out, you know, 17 hitters through six innings against this offense, which was really impressive. But this team's hitting .313 as a team, 78 home runs, led by Travis Bazzano, who has an argument to be made for the best player in the country, quite frankly. We've talked about him in a ton of detail. They also have a couple other guys that have been very productive. Gavin Turley's a guy hitting .285 with 12 homers. Elijah Hanlon has hit 9 home runs with .287. They have a couple other guys over .300. But the operations led by Travis Bazzano, and how far can Travis Bazzano take you? And that's what you're basically going to get with this club, is definitely going to be something that I'm watching. And then on the pitching side, we're talking about a solid staff. Again, when we talk about this team, and you always have to have the caveat that they are playing in a down Pac-12, right? Let's just put it what it is. Oregon State beat Stanford in a series. Oregon is coming off of a series loss to Stanford. Stanford's a team that was in the College World Series last year that has just been a train wreck, for lack of a better term. So the Pac-12's down. UCLA's not good either as they transition to the Big Ten. They're very young, but just hasn't been very good. So but pitching to a 4.06 as a team, 340 strikeouts and 348 innings. They're led in Friday night by, drawing a blank here, Aiden May is his name. Pretty good stuff there, a guy that they need, but he's been in and out of the rotation in terms of health and being ready to go on Friday. So we'll be interested to see if he's been back the last couple of weeks. Making sure he's healthy is going to be a big piece of Oregon State's potential for anything postseason-wise, but also this year as they try to round out being the top of the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, this is an offensive-driven team because, you know, when you look across the country and we talk about the best pitching staffs, we talk about a lot of swing and miss, and Oregon doesn't really have it. Jacob Metz, who's numbers-wise their best arm this year, it's interesting. He's got a whip under one, but he's got an ERA close to three, and he doesn't miss bats is a lot of why that can happen to you, right? Like, if you don't miss bats and you find barrels, he's given up 7 homers on the year, but he's only struck out, I think, 40-some in 55 innings. So, like, as a staff, that's kind of what you look at. And stop me if you've heard this before. There's, like you said, the Sunday slot in that rotation, game three, has been kind of a turnstile for them. And due to injury in part, but also just, like, you know, that's they've struggled to find consistency there. So they kind of have to out-hit the problems on the mound, which is not abnormal for college baseball, right? Like, if that's kind of stock program, in my opinion, is like you're trying to out hit your issues on the mound. because it's hard to find good quality pitching. They can do that. They have a lineup that can do that. When you OPS as a team over 1,000, you can out-hit your woes on the mound.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Let's talk about the Ducks for a second before we get out of here and conclude it. Their offense has been really good this year, 296 with 64 bombs. But I think the thing that worries me at least a little bit is a lot of that production has come from Jacob Walsh, the left-handed hitter. He's hitting 315 with 18 home runs. They have nobody else above eight. They have two guys with 8 and 6, and both those guys are hitting below 230. So the operation in terms of you either have average guys at the top that have no power or guys that hit for no average and have a ton of power, which is an interesting way to build a lineup. It can work. There's definitely ways for that to work. But the reality is Jacob Walsh is the guy. He has 16 home runs. Did I say 18 earlier? Or did I not say how many he had? Sorry, 16. I'm not going to lie, their stat page is a little bit like funky. Of course, Oregon's doing something creative with their numbers, and it's weird that it bleeds a little bit. Yeah, exactly. Of course it is, right? And they're hitting three, and Jacob Walsh is hitting 315. On the pitching side, pitching to a five as a club, you're going to have to see, it's going to be high scoring. They do miss some bats, but they also walk some guys, 362 strikeouts in 358 innings, but pitching to a 505 ERA as a staff, which is obviously not going to hold up against a pretty good Oregon State offense.
Yeah, and it's interesting for them is they have some relievers with some really good numbers. So for them, like their starting pitching has kind of struggled a little bit to you know help them get leads, which I think is why if you go back and look kind of box score watch, it seems like that's why they've dropped some games here that they maybe they shouldn't have, especially early in the year. But their bullpen, it seems like they've kind of got some rolls down and they've done a good job. And keep an eye on Maddox Maloney. Is that his name? I think that's his name.
That's a pretty cool name. Maddox Maloney.
Maddox Maloney. It's an alliteration. But he's got 6 bombs on the year. He's hitting over 400. He didn't play until March 3rd. So he's kind of come in late. He only has 72 at-bats on the year, but he's been really good since he started playing regularly. So that's a guy that kind of continues to boost that offense. Like you said, it's another team that kind of outslugs their pitching problems. But a team like that, if they can get a couple guys, like if you feel like you have some bullpen depth and you can get a couple starting pitchers hot and deep into games, especially when you get to this time of year, you can make a run. And we've seen Oregon go on runs in years past.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, this is a team that they do a good job. They historically speaking, they have pretty solid offenses and they develop talent pretty well and recruit at a pretty high level as well. So it's not like it's a foreign concept from Oregon, you know, putting together a good weekend and winning a conference series, especially with Oregon State not playing their best baseball. But it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the Pac-12 season unfolds. Obviously, we know Arizona's playing the best ball right now. Who's going to step up and play their best ball in the last month of the season as we transition into May at the midway point of next week? That will be one to tell. We haven't spent a ton of time covering the Pac-12 because it is down, but it is one of the things that there are a couple big series that seem like they're going to be cropping up over the next couple weeks and definitely ones that we're going to have our eyes on. But Dan, any initial thoughts, any other things that you're looking for this weekend? I know I got one in particular if you want me to kind of take it here and talk about it a little bit.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm obviously super excited to watch UNC play Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech's going to be coming south to take on the Tar Heels, going to try to get up there for at least one game, see our friends up there at Virginia Tech. A lot of runs. A lot of runs. Both teams can really swing it. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a hitting guy's dream. We're going to go down there. We're going to get up there and try to see them play. But a lot of really good offenses on both sides. You mentioned UNC had to throw some bullpen arms that I'm sure they didn't want to throw with a conference series coming up. But those are guys that have, you know, Mathias specifically has been a guy that's pitched a lot for them this whole season. So it's kind of just par for the course for him to pitch on a Tuesday and then roll back out there on a Friday. But we'll be interesting to see what guys they have to use. We'll be interesting to see how Carolina stacks up their starting rotation. All of those things will be interesting to see how they unfold.
Yeah, interesting you said that. Just real quick, think about it. Mathias has thrown almost as many innings as Jacob Batts, Oregon State's number one. We just talked about him having 55 innings, and after last night, Mathias is at, 48?
That's crazy. He has 11 wins.
He's a stud.
He might have 12. He might have got the win yesterday.
No, I think Bovier got the win yesterday. But he might have 11, 12 wins, whatever. I mean, we talked about it after we saw him against ECU. He's really good. A lot of offense. The Hokies swing it just about as good as anybody. Carolina's lineup is really good, 1-9. That's going to be a really fun series as well. Also, just real quick, I think it's interesting. I'm showing how much I haven't paid attention to the Pac-12. 7 of Oregon State's 9 losses this year have come in a down Pac-12, which is why they need to start playing better baseball.
Well, I mean, say what you want. The lasting image.
Yeah.
Well, no, not even that. The lasting image we have of Oregon State baseball is getting punched out by the best starter in the country 17 times over 6 innings, which is not exactly a resounding, oh, we're really good. And then again, you take it to Michigan, which is fine. They're an average middle of the pack Big Ten team at this point in time. And then Oklahoma State, who was not playing good baseball then, they took it to them as well. So you kind of leave that weekend going, well, they were pretty good. It's like, well, what were those wins? And then outside of that, it's like midweek in the Pacific Northwest is not like, what it's do tough. You do it's with that? Like this area, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like you don't like they've played Portland. I think they're going to end up playing Portland 3 times. They got Gonzaga a couple times, who's obviously a good club historically, but has kind of down this year. And just Nevada, who's not very good, who they actually lost to in the midweek. So just a ton of opportunities to drop games that you probably shouldn't drop. The one I'm circling right now in Tucson, Arizona, the last weekend of the season, Oregon Without State question. Versus Arizona, and seeing obviously which team, and then Pac-12 play. So it'll be fascinating. But you're right. I don't know. We don't know what to make. I feel like the reason why Oregon State is at the top of a lot of rankings and in the top 10 is because you feel like there's a pressure to keep the Pac-12 at the top, because historically speaking, it's a really, really good baseball conference. And there's a lot of like, well, what are they? Because like, again, that's the problem when you talk about conference play, is like when you're just beating up on each other, does that mean, is that a strength or a weakness as a conference?
Right. It's always hard to tell. Yep.
It's always hard to tell. And you don't know till the postseason. Right. And so when it gets to the postseason and you see these teams stack up, like, who knows, maybe we see 3 Pac-12 teams in super regionals. We don't know that. We don't know the answer to that right now, but the potential's there to do it. I don't see it right now, to be quite honest with you, but definitely wish we would have seen more from Oregon State. You would think if Oregon State was a legit national championship contender in a down Pac-12, they would be dominating it the way we talked about Kentucky going into Tennessee.
Yes.
Would be what I would say.
Yes. Yes. I would agree.
Okay. Any closing thoughts, Dan? Anything you're looking forward to this weekend? Anything specific you want our listeners to tune into as well?
Just one we didn't mention, Georgia and Texas A&M play. So another opportunity for the Dogs to kind of make a name for themselves. I would expect Texas A&M to handle them. But just another ranked matchup to keep an eye on.
In Georgia or?
I believe in College Station.
Have fun with that, Dogs.
Yeah.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in, as that will conclude our episode for today. Make sure you're subscribing to the podcast on all podcast platforms, including Apple Pods, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcast. Also, check out our YouTube channel. Ton of good content, including episode clips going up on there. Make sure we post episodes bi-weekly, always hitting your feed at 7 a.m. sharp. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at BacksideGB, Instagram at BacksideGroundBalls, and TikTok at BacksideGroundBall. And most importantly, make sure you're sharing with 5 friends, and we'll see you next time on the Backside Ground Balls podcast.